and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Look, this is about making investments in people. That's what I promised I would do.
Our Spotlight Politics team on where budget negotiations stand after Alder people block a proposal to raise property taxes. The Onion is adding controversial InfoWars to its brand. How the satire site is expanding its funny business. And the Cook County Forest Preserve District is reaching a major milestone. Now to some of today's top stories. Mayor Brandon Johnson is back to the drawing board. This after the entire city council voted down his proposed $300 million property tax hike proposal last week. Johnson says his new plan would only hike property taxes half that amount.
This is not the final budget. We've reduced the property tax by $150 million. There's an ongoing level of collaboration that I'm very encouraged by, and I'm grateful that the city council has embraced this new process, and I believe it's good for the people of Chicago to see this type of robust level of collaboration take place. I believe it's going to help restore that much more confidence in government.
The city has until the end of the year to pass a budget for 2025. Our Spotlight Politics team will have much more on this in just a few minutes. The Chicago Police Department is making progress, but still behind schedule on a court order requiring it to change the way it trains, supervises, and disciplines officers. That's according to independent monitor Maggie Hickey, who just released her 10th report on the subject. The report says CPD is fully compliant with just 9% of the federal consent decree. Hickey added her voice to the growing chorus of officials calling on the city to invest financially in the decree, saying in a release, quote, failure to fund reform is also a clear violation of consent decree paragraph 700, which requires the city to provide, quote, necessary and reasonable financial resources necessary through steps or processes that can include the budget process to fulfill its obligations under this agreement. While Santa's sleigh gets tuned up for the big day, the big guy and his elves will be taking public transit this holiday season. The CTA holiday trains and buses are one of the city's most beloved seasonal traditions, and it's back next week, yes, the week of Thanksgiving. Riders can expect a six-car CTA train decorated with holiday scenes and lights with Santa greeting riders from a flatbed. Kiddos can grab a photo of the jolliest elf on Saturdays, and adults too. For more on the train and the buses' routes and schedules, please visit our website. Up next, a new path forward in the battle over Chicago's budget. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and much more right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Mayor Brandon Johnson is back to the drawing board after City Council unanimously voted against a $300 million hike to property taxes. Meanwhile, state officials are pushing back on President-elect Donald Trump's promise to execute mass deportations. And the trial of Michael Madigan is in its fifth week with the end not quite in sight yet. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Heather Sharone and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, team, as always. So we mentioned this unanimous vote by the Chicago City Council, sending negotiations over the city spending plan for 2025 back to square one. Let's listen to what the mayor had to say about what Alder people should do now.
Well, I'm just going to say this. I know it's going to upset my folks in my comms team, but, you know, some of the steps and measures that are being taken, these are some individuals are having tantrums right now. It's time to grow up. People in Chicago don't have time for that.
Tough talk from the mayor, Heather. So he said that negotiations over the weekend were positive. Where do things stand?
Well, he has offered to cut that property tax hike, as we heard, in half to $150 million. But that still leaves another $150 million. And it's not clear that 26 members of the city council will vote to approve a budget that includes any level of property tax. But as I've said before, the city has only limited ways to raise money. Now, there's a proposal floating out there to increase the city's least tax on computing services that go from 9% to 11% to raise about $128 million. However, you can only sort of increase those smaller taxes so much. And the mayor, again today, ruled off any budget plan that lays off city employees, orders them to take furloughs, or cuts city services. That means there are only a limited number of options and a limited number of days to get this done. The deadline to pass a budget is 6 weeks from today, December 31st, and the holidays are coming. Santa's on his way on the CTA train.
He's
right
taking
now.
The train, as we know, right? Yeah. That tends to slow things down when the holidays approach. Heather, remind us how we got to this point.
Well, the city's finances have long been out of whack, with expenses, particularly pensions, outpacing revenues. So the city had to close $928 million worth of budget gaps. So right now, that gap is somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 million because the city council rejected that property tax hike. However, everything is basically up for grabs. You have some alder people saying the city should use what's left of the city's COVID-19 relief funds. You have other alder people saying there should be deep cuts. Other alder people don't want to make an additional pension payment that would help the city sort of bring up those funded ratios and relieve that crisis. Everything's on the table there, but there is only a limited number of ways to raise hundreds of millions of dollars in 6 weeks.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see whether council members end up sort of taking that easy way out and, you know, neglecting to make that additional pension payment, because if that's something that the mayor, you know, goes against, that is another of the issues that he has really made a centerpiece of his, you know, budgeting, saying that the city's budget has long been out of whack, as you said, that there have been all these structural problems created by past administrations, that looking at the Emanuel and the Daley administration before it, and, you know, they failed to address these problems. Well, if you go along with a plan that doesn't make that additional pension payment, arguably that is more of the same kind of, you know, short-term focus on budgeting rather than trying to deal with some of the structural problems. But it is certainly, you know, one way to ease the tension.
Ease the tension, sort of band-aiding, or like patching up this one problem while not fully addressing another one. Heather, as we mentioned earlier, there's been a growing chorus of people who are concerned that the proposed budget would hurt progress on the Chicago Police Department's consent decree, including Attorney General Kwame Raoul, who sent a letter to the mayor. You asked the mayor about that today. What did he say?
I asked if he regretted making those cuts because they are unacceptable to basically everyone in charge of implementing the consent decree. And he just declined to say that he did. He said, look, they're up for negotiations. We're sort of negotiating this. But I also asked whether that this is an indication that he's not fully committed to implementing the consent decree, which of course is designed to stop Chicago police officers from routinely violating the constitutional rights of Black and Latino Chicagoans. And again, he said, look, I am committed to constitutional policing. I think the question is, how much are you willing to pay to make that a reality? And how much can the city afford to do that this year?
And it's going to be interesting to see if this, you know, becomes a larger political fight between, you know, one of Illinois' top statewide elected Democrats and, you know, the mayor of its most populous city. You know, we should remember this consent decree is being enforced by the Illinois Attorney General's office because it first, you know, this investigation got kicked off during the Obama administration, you know, after the, you know, the murder of Laquan McDonald. But this was, you know, essentially dropped by the Trump DOJ, and the state AG picked it up. So it's going to be interesting to see now that this is something being locally enforced, if there are these cuts and this blows up into a wider disagreement, further tensions between statewide Dems and Mayor Johnson.
Nick, we also heard from Mayor Johnson. We heard him reiterate that Chicago would remain a sanctuary city. We know that Governor Pritzker has been out front on this, pushing back against President-elect Trump's promise for mass deportations. What has he said?
Well, President Trump has floated the idea of a national emergency, allowing him to call out the military on U.S. soil, which would be an extraordinary measure to use, you know, the military members to, you know, round folks up for deportation. Now, Pritzker said that is potentially illegal, unconstitutional. That's something he, you know, says he's investigating, pushing back on. There's also the notion that Trump might call out the National Guard. Of course, governors are the ones who call out the National Guard. Certainly, there will be plenty of sympathetic Republican governors who are willing to go along with this plan. But, you know, Pritzker's raising the alarm here, saying Trump cannot do this on his own. And it would also be an incredibly, you know, extraordinary, unprecedented, we're tired of saying these words, a really unusual measure if, you know, say, a neighboring state called out the National Guard and deployed them to another state.
Heather, we're in the fifth week of the trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Jurors heard about a number of his allies who received about $1.3 million from ComEd. What are they trying to show here?
Well, they're trying to show that basically when he was Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan was running a criminal operation that was designed to trade official actions, rate hikes, other sort of legislative deals in return for making sure that his friends and allies got no work or low work jobs. Now, later this week, perhaps as early as tomorrow, we will hear from disgraced former alderman Danny Solis, who went basically undercover as a government mole, not only in the investigation of Madigan, but also the former alderman Ed Burke, who is currently incarcerated. And we will hear sort of how he sort of worked to sort of gather information on Madigan in what is truly going to be a seminal moment of this trial, which is going to continue well into the new year, it appears.
Wow. Nick, CTA just passed its 2025 operating budget, but not without some criticism from the board. What were their concerns, and how did the CTA president respond?
Yeah, the budget itself is, you know, fairly low drama, but the board really expressed some consternation with Carter over the issue of security services, of making sure that riders who they are desperately trying to draw back, boost those ridership levels to pandemic heights, they want to make sure that folks feel secure. We should note, crime is way down on the CTA. There certainly was a spike in recent years, but that problem has significantly abated. CTA officials have deployed private security firms, and there's been some criticism of the board saying, yeah, these folks aren't really doing that much. They're often citing complaints both that they've witnessed and that other people saying that they're not, dealing with passengers who are perhaps violating the rules, smoking, playing loud music, being disruptive, perhaps being dangerous. So there's been some pushback on that. They say, we want to see metrics. We do not have a clear sense of where these folks are deployed. They also want to see more about sort of preventative measures. Instead of just having the, either more CPD deployed or private security deployed, they want and pushed, in fact, in a sort of a last-minute change to get $3 million of the security contract diverted to preventive measures. So we will see how that plays out. But they're really clear with Carter that they don't feel like they are in the loop on this, and they want more.
We've heard from, many legislators, and, we just discussed Governor J.B. Pritzker and some other governors are trying to sort of Trump-proof their state policies. Are CTA officials at all thinking about, what a Trump administration might mean for transportation in this area?
Well, certainly the big ticket item is that 5.6-mile Red Line extension that will finally carry the train past 95th Street to cover the full far south side. They are in the final steps of getting $1.9 billion in federal grant funding for this, and they are really racing to get this done before the Biden administration hands over the keys, if you will, at the Department of Transportation to make sure that much-needed funding for the project comes through. President Carter, CTA officials expressing confidence that they could get this done. They also said with that red-purple modernization project that's going on right now, they were in the same position in 2016, 2017. They managed to get it done on a tight time frame. There are certainly other issues, other areas that they are concerned about that they are bracing for, but that really, in the near term, they need that $1.9 billion for this project to move forward.
All right. We'll be hopefully seeing how quickly they can get all of that through. Get it down the track, everybody. See what I did there? All right. Nick Lundberg and Heather Schroen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Up next, look at The Onion's plan to expand its satirical business. Satirical news site The Onion is buying InfoWars, the website founded by conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, and no, it's not a joke. The purchase happened in a bankruptcy auction held after Jones was ordered to pay $1.5 billion in a defamation lawsuit brought by families of Sandy Hook victims. But Jones and company are fighting back, claiming fraud and collusion. Joining us now with more is Jordan LaFleur, executive editor of The Onion. Welcome to Chicago Tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So why did The Onion want to buy InfoWars?
Why not? I mean, it was just such a rare opportunity. And, you know, internally, when it became when we became aware that it was a possibility, we just immediately latched onto the idea that it would be the funniest possible thing that we could do. We are resourced appropriately, we are eager, and I think it's just going to be the funniest thing ever.
What is the plan for the website then?
Well, I mean, it's in need of a new coat of paint, I'll tell you that. You know, obviously, supporting it as is not on the roadmap. It is a just a house of lies and fear-mongering, and we think it would be better served by something other than that. So we intend to satirize and parody the larger ecosystem of mis and disinformation.
So what kind of, I mean, The Onion is known for its headlines. What can we kind of expect from an InfoWars by The Onion
sure.
website?
Sure. I mean, we're having meetings on this just today. I think the best way that I would phrase it is that The Onion is known to be more of an institutional voice.
So
that's kind of a monolith, faceless organization. One thing that's exciting for me creatively and for the whole team is that InfoWars will give us the opportunity to speak in the voice of particular characters. And so, you know, there will be a whole host, a litany of characters that we can use to parody the existing site.
Characters whose thinking and speaking might be something like Alex Jones and those who listen to him?
Yes, utterly unhinged, fear-mongering, and ultimately just an attempt to sell you ineffective brain pills. Yes.
So Alex Jones, he's still finding a way to peddle his, you know, his conspiracy theorists without owning InfoWars. He has said that he's got a new thing all set up and ready to go. Was there hope that, you know, that buying his site might be able to block him from causing more harm?
I mean, any means of preventing him from causing more harm ought to be explored. But no, I think the important part here was to take the brand and use it for good. You know, a man of his constitution, as we knew, would be impossible to silence utterly. We look forward to using the brand for something other than he would have liked.
And as we mentioned, InfoWars and other of Jones's assets, they're being liquidated. He had to file for bankruptcy so that he could pay the defamation case to the victims of Sandy Hook because he is known for being the person who pushed the falsehood that the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Connecticut was a quote-unquote hoax. Talk about a little bit what The Onion is doing, though, actually, to push gun reform.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a history with this. One of our most effective pieces of satire in the 13 years that I've been at The Onion is a headline that people might be familiar with. It's No Way to Prevent This, says Only Nation, where this regularly happens. And unfortunately, we've had to publish that 37 times in the aftermath of mass shootings. And so we have a history in this realm and an unfortunate one. So the opportunity to work with Everytown to continue to further awareness of gun violence and how to prevent it is just a very rare opportunity for us and one we're looking forward to.
Of course, you're referring to Everytown for Gun Safety.
That's right. Thank you so much. Yes.
So this news, it follows, again, the presidential election, Donald Trump being named president-elect again. Trump and Jones have ties, and Vice President-elect J.D. Vance has even called Jones a truth teller. How are you planning on covering a second Trump term?
Oh, boy. I don't want to gloss it over. It will, in fact, be difficult. Donald Trump is a difficult figure to satirize. One of the comedic tools that we frequently use is heightening, and it's difficult to heighten from such a place of bombast and untruth. And so it's akin to covering a hurricane. You know, like, I think we focus on it's important to monitor like where the hurricane is and the wind direction and whether it's an F2 or F3. But we are going to focus on the aftermath, the casualties, and what he lays waste to and how he's affecting real people.
You mentioned heightening is a tool that you use in comedy. I don't know what that is. What does that mean?
When you take a basic premise that people understand, and essentially it's exaggeration. And it's just how we one path to a punchline.
And why is he difficult? Why is President Trump difficult to satirize?
Well, because, I mean, the things that he says and does are just so utterly ridiculous. Just on the face of it, I mean, the simple way to put it is that it reads as satirical on the face of it. And so to use something so heightened, to use my own word again, when it starts from such a heightened place, it's a difficult jumping off point.
Why do you think political satire is such a powerful tool when calling out misinformation and political figures?
It can be a powerful tool. I think it is most effective as a balm or a salve to people who are watching the world and feeling uncertain, feeling angry. I think the most receptive audiences, or the most important audiences for satire, you know, is the emperor who's wearing no clothes. We're trying to call it the emperor, and we're trying to let people know that there are people who realize it. I don't know that it is the most effective tool to change hearts and minds, but I do think it's an effective tool to let people know that there are people watching and people who understand what's happening.
As we mentioned, a company affiliated with Jones's website that sells supplements has asked the bankruptcy judge to disqualify your bid, claiming fraud and collusion. Are you worried about this bid being held up because of this suit?
I am supremely confident in our bid. I think it should come as no surprise that this is what Alex Jones is doing. What I have found surprising is the credulousness that a lot of traditional media has reported these events with. I think, he gets a couple of lawyers to generate a legal document, and you get a bunch of reporters responding to it as though it's equally impactful as genuine legal action. It is utterly ridiculous.
What do you think satire can do that traditional news can't?
I think we can call a spade a spade, even though it's through the lens of a joke. I think a lot of people, are rightfully skeptical of traditional media. I think traditional media can be a little mealy-mouthed when they're evaluating controversial topics and political figures who have no concern for the truth. We do it through the lens of humor and jokes, but we can call people out more directly in a way that is more impactful and people are more likely to retain.
New InfoWars. What can we expect? We've talked about that a little bit, but when will it be live? Is the URL, will that be the same, I imagine?
Yes, we absolutely intend to retain the URL. We want to lean on the current branding just to make it all the more painful for those who have affinity for the current version. Hopefully January we have something to show the world. Might be an incremental launch, but we will be ready in some form or fashion in the new year.
Okay. Any other big plans for branching out from there, since a lot of InfoWars was, a video?
I think that's enough new plans for one little team.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
the paper is an ongoing concern, and people ought to consider subscribing to it to support the larger endeavor. The dollars that go towards those memberships and subscription allow us to do insane things like this. And the more members we get, the more we can do.
Okay. Jordan LaFleur, thank you for joining us. Good to see you.
You as well. Thank you so much.
Up next, details on a major milestone for Cook County Forest Preserves. Stay with us. It's a major milestone for the Cook County Forest Preserves. The district's Board of Commissioners unanimously approved today the purchase of this 68-acre plot of land in south suburban Cook County. This brings the Forest Preserve's holdings to more than 70,000 acres. Our Patty Wetley joins us now with more. Patty, how significant is this milestone for the district?
I bring you tidings. Good news.
From the Forest Preserves.
It's huge. They have been aiming toward this number for a decade. Just this year alone, they've acquired 249 acres, which is second most that they've acquired since 1984. So think about 84. Is that what, 40 years ago?
Yes.
Do the math.
Sure.
Like how long it's taken to acquire land these days. There's not that much available. There's competition for it. So this, as they said, is a very big, big, big deal for
big
them.
Big deal for them. So how much land has the district acquired so far this year? You just mentioned 200
yes.
and something. How is it possible?
It's interesting because they had, they were formed in 1914. In the first 25 years, they acquired like 33,000 acres. So think about how long it's taken them to get to this point. 70 acres here, 70 acres there. And they've really been focused on it and promised that the tax levy that Cook County voters approved in 2022 would go toward. acquiring more land, more habitat for wildlife, more nature for humans to enjoy, and to be able to maintain and restore it. So, you know, today is kind of their, you know, proof is in the pudding that they delivered on the promises that they made to voters.
Having made good makes me want to check out some forest preserves, which I think I should.
Except the snow is maybe coming, so maybe you should have done that.
We ain't afraid of no snow. All right, Patty Whatley. Thanks so much. Good to see you. Thanks, Brandis. And you can read Patty's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news. And we're back right after this. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Check out our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, for more context on the biggest issues of the day. You can sign up at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for the very latest, like a deep dive into what happens when a prison closes. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10, celebrating 30 years of the landmark documentary Hoop Dreams. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its 20 attorneys recognized in the 2025 edition of the Best Lawyers in America.